Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today's guest is the wonderful singer-songwriter Emily Sandé, who I don't think either of us have ever met. And we're excited that she's bringing her sister Lucy. I love when people bring family. I don't think we've had someone bring a sibling yet.
Have we not?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, she's had a really varied, hugely successful career as a black British female in music.
That's not easy.
And also there's been this report recently about the misogyny in the music industry.
Yeah. I was saying that there was a period where it seemed like every other song on the radio or on TV was by Emily Sandé.
So. Oh, I love her voice.
Do you remember the Emily Sandé years?
It was Emily Sandé years.
She was just at the background of everything. And she didn't look like a conventional pop star in the fact that she wasn't just like sort of sexy young dancing, because at the time there was quite a lot of that. She was a completely different flex.
She's always felt very rooted to me, like really rooted in musicality, in her own musicality.
Yeah.
And a proper musician, you know, really interesting.
A real
and
songwriter.
And really absorbed in her own musicality, which I really like about her. She's also got this brilliant cadence to her voice that I love, which is that she's really powerful, but she drops it soft.
Yeah.
And that's
what did you call it? Powerfully gently.
Gently powerful. I love that.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
This is for you guys.
Just the new album.
We've had an Emily Sandé little rave before you came.
Right, so let's get this food down here and let's get this.
So, you're going to tell the girls what we're eating?
Mm-hmm. Beetroots that are poached in pink peppercorns, berries, and some other little bits that we found. And then we made a syrup, a reduction from that, and topped it off with some pistachios. And then we've got whipped vegan feta and roasted spiced pumpkin with lots of different herbs.
Ooh,
and then
made I love the way that one looks.
Spinach amazing. And rocket and watercress. And then this is roasted cabbage with a cashew and tahini dressing and lots of spring onions. And then these are yam and potato cakes stuffed with caramelised onions and spring onion on the top.
Wow. Beautiful. A vegan gorgeous. Feast.
A love vegan that. Feast, man. So yeah, why don't I pass you that first?
Yeah, help yourself, please. So, are you the kind of sisters that do quite a lot of things together, or is this quite weird that you asked Lucy to do this and Lucy, you were tricked into being here today?
Well, we do a lot, like, especially when we're living together, but usually, like, work's quite separate. Like, Lucy will come to shows, but this is one of the first times we've done something like this together.
Other than the Shine video.
Oh, yeah, we did like the Shine special video.
So you were in Emily's video?
Yes.
But it feels natural because Lucy's always been a big part of my journey from the very beginning with music.
And Lucy, you're the one that filmed Emily singing. And was it you that said, let's send it to Trevor Nelson?
Well, it's probably you that said, let's send it, but I'm on board, obviously.
Tell
me what happened. Tell me all about this.
Well, when I was a kid, we had the piano downstairs, and I would always just like make up these songs listening to music my dad had introduced me to. And Lucy would always be the first critic. I'm like, Lucy, it's ready. Come down and listen. I'd do a little performance, and then she'd always just give me this encouragement. She never made me feel crazy for having this dream. She's like, yeah, cool. And I was like, let's video it. And so Lucy, yeah, was videoing that first tape that went off to Trevor.
So important.
And is that what happened? You sent a tape off to Trevor Nelson?
Yeah, I used to listen to Rhythm Nation.
Yeah, brilliant.
And he was like, any singers out there, rappers, get it out. And me being in Scotland, I was like, how else am I going to...
I know, I miss this kind of old school, the old school roots of getting into the music industry. Like, quite... kind of, you had to be innovative and you had to kind of just think about, you know, your own way of doing things and just get on with it.
Yeah,
put things into action. Because how old were you?
Yeah, what, 15, 16 there?
Oh my God, you were really young. Yeah.
Ready to go already.
And my mum was burning CDs, sending it off to radio stations, like competition, anything.
Oh.
But yeah, it all started at that video, actually.
And something that I was quite interested in is that you, and I knew that you were a songwriter for a really long time before you were sort of being Emily Sandy. It was like songwriting, then lots of guest spots, and then you became this unbelievably huge, successful solo artist. But in the old, when you were a kid, you were really like writing songs, like writing songs, like writing bridges and middle eights and stuff.
McKee's obsessed with song structure.
She's like, what is a middle eight, Mum? I'm still not quite sure the difference between a bridge and a middle eight. I mean, obviously, you middle eight.
I thought it was
middle.
The same thing.
It's like a step.
Americans say bridge.
Yeah, and we say middle eight.
You've never said that.
No, you know what? I've never really understood that distinction that Americans say bridge and we say middle eight.
I think that is. I mean, there might be some other.
Or is the bridge, does it not lead up to the chorus? Or is that completely different?
That's the pre-chorus. Okay. But yeah, some people do call that the bridge.
And some people call that the step.
No, I've never heard that.
Oh, that's because I'm old.
That was his 80s way of saying the bridge. The step.
Take it to the step.
Take it to the step.
That does sound like you.
It does sound quite old.
But you weren't intimidated by that. You were just madly curious by the structure of song.
Yeah, and I think my dad, he introduced me to the world's greatest. There was no in between. He was like, that's Nina Simone. Right. That's Aretha Franklin. That's Stevie Wonder. That's Anita Baker. So he just always showed me the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, whoa, I'm listening to what they do, the intricacies, like Nina Simone's classical knowledge, Mr. Jazz. It was so intricate. So when I came to London, when I started working Naughty Boy, that's when I had to reel it in a little bit. He was like, we need a verse. A chorus. Maybe a step. And let's just sail on out. Like two choruses and we're out.
You're like, but then there's another little bit. Yeah.
It's like, no, chill out.
Naughty Boy, Tiny Temper, Labyrinth, like that. Right. It was a huge surge in Black British music, but it was very poppy.
Yes.
And it was, Naughty Boy was behind a lot of that, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think his genius is really, if you listen to Naughty Boy's beats when we first met, they really just... There, again, he was kind of out there as well. But then you kind of learn, okay, how do you write a song? How do you be successful as a songwriter? So I think that also feeds into how you make your own music.
Yeah.
But yeah, he can find the soul and kind of polish it up to sound something like pop, but he's still got the edge. Yeah. So that's why I always loved working with Naughty Boy, because I'd learn, but also he let me be me.
People kind of use pop as a bit of a dirty word, but actually great pop music just means popular, you know. Yeah. So it's just music with a really good hook that you can't stop singing because it's excellent. That's really, that's what really good pop
But that's why that period of time was so great, because it was like us bringing our funk into the mainstream and sort of giving it the jacket it needed. Yeah. To live out there. And then we just started taking over. I really do remember this time. It was an exciting time. And actually, we have a connection, kind of, because my ex-boyfriend was Luke, who was Professor Green's DJ for 5 years.
Yeah.
So around that time, when Read All About It, yours and Professor Green, Stephen's song went to number one. I just remember it was like powerful. What a number one could still do. Because we just asked everyone in the room, no one knows what's number one today.
Yeah, it's a different time.
It does. It's not even really relevant anymore, is it, particularly?
But that was life-changing, though.
Yeah. And like you said, we all kind of knew each other. I got signed to Tim and Danny at Stellar Songs, and they were like, you should hear this guy, Labyrinth. And they were just playing demos while we're driving around in London. So he was on his journey, stepping into that publishing first stage. Then Professor Green had been signed to Virgin maybe 6 months before me. So before I got signed, we're in Naughty Boy Studio. So it really felt like a community. Mm. And then for everyone to kind of come up at the same time was super exciting.
Yeah, it feels good. It feels like a bit like, it's powerful. It's a magical thing.
Yeah.
For me, who's a bit older, it was interesting because it felt like finally sort of black musical voices or diverse or multicultural musical voices, which is what our world always looks like, were being allowed some space on the stage. Yep. Because prior to that, really, there'd be like, you'd have a one-off, like Misha Paris would have one hit and then she would sort of disappear again, or mm-hmm. no presence at the Brits, no presence at any musical awards, no presence really on Top of the Pops or any of those places either.
Yeah, yeah.
So it really felt like finally there was some space being made for us.
It was a precursor to a lot of shit that's happening now as well. Like, it was like, that's just as like Dizzy was coming with, Dizzy was coming back, but then Grime was having its own moment, which was like, now we're really bringing our shit. Like,
and that's proper. The thing. I think it's so cool that it also sounded British. I think it was like, this is Black British.
Yes.
Labyrinth always had like, I love his approach to music because it's so unique.
You know, really, and idiosyncratic and of himself completely. Yeah. Really interesting.
And at this time, Lucy, in your life, were you kind of sharing all this craziness that was going on with Emily?
I guess I was. We weren't at that time, I think. I was kind of in and out.
Yeah.
I think I just graduated, so I followed Emily down here. But yeah, kind of in and out.
You knew that your sister was up to cool shit in London, though.
But I would spend a lot of time, like, in the studio, coming to Shah's studio. Yeah. And just, do you know what it was? Just being there to, just an observer. Mm. Or a witness.
Did it feel inevitable to you that she was coming through?
Yes, and I love that question because that's always felt. I feel like I learned what faith is, like the feeling of faith from knowing, from when we were children. Because this was, Emily was so young when she knew that's what she wanted to do, and when she started singing and started songwriting, that I just knew. And a lot of the setbacks, I always think there's sometimes I was a bit insensitive, because when you had a setback, but I was, you know, I knew in my heart, well, this is going to be, everyone's going to hear these songs that I'm hearing, or our family's hearing, everybody's going to hear. So yeah.
Wait, so
that's
what
the
were you a
half, way to describe it.
You half
I just
sibling.
Remember maybe there was like, I just remember there being a setback. And I wasn't as compassionate
as
or as sensitive as I could have been, because for me it was like, okay, but then what's next kind of thing.
Maybe
but that
was just the level of your faith.
That's how she's dressing it up, Emily, right?
I believe in you so much, I don't even see this as a setback.
I believe in you so much, could you shut up, stop whining.
We're fine. You're going to be a star.
But yeah, it was inevitable. That's the perfect way to describe it.
I like also that you said being an observer of this time, because I think maybe Emily, when you're, because I know when I was young and my career just went, sometimes you miss it when you're in it, and you have your family go, you know, that was mental that year, and you're like, oh yeah, I guess it was. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, and then reminding you, like, take a break. Like, Lucy is the best, but she's like, I've just looked at your diary. Maybe we should take a bit there.
Yes.
And it's important, because otherwise you completely burn out. But yeah, observing from that.
And it's hard to think about that, though, isn't it? Because you're so whipped up with the excitement of it as well. And also, as a person who's had setbacks, you never know whether that setback's going to come again. So you kind of, it's really hard to say no to stuff, just in case the next opportunity doesn't come. There's always that in the back of your head. Did you feel like that, though?
Yeah, exactly that. And also because this was a kind of, you know, pioneering time in terms of Black people in the pop charts. It was, is this going to happen again? Is this the last opportunity?
It's our only moment.
Let's go. And after years of trying to get the door down, you can end up just overworking because you're just afraid to take that break, but you need it artistically to know what you want to do next. And I think that's the problem when musicians are in the industry. You forget that it has to come from the music, and you kind of lose faith that that's where it all began in the first place.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We'll be right back.
What I wanted to ask you about was the way that you approach things, because you're really academic and have had a whole kind of academic life before music, or sort of around and threaded throughout, studying neuroscience.
Basically, I went to Glasgow to study medicine, 3 years in med school there. So then you're exploring, you know, first year is like anatomy, then you go into biochemistry, then third year you get a bit more clinical. So you're getting, you know, into it. And then after your third year, if you want to do an intercalated degree, you can go and specialize in something you like. I really wanted to look more into neuroscience. So it's kind of just a module within the intercalated degree.
What's an intercalated degree? I don't know what
it's
that
like
is.
It's like a specialist year where you can get your Bachelor of Science on top of your medical degree if you want
to
do it.
So my mum probably thinks she's ready for this because she thinks she's been to med school because of how much she watches Grey's Anatomy. Yeah, yeah. And ER.
You definitely know more than at this point. Trust me.
There is some fucked up shit. She'll be like, yeah, but that's obviously a blow. I'm like, oh my God.
So you're probably pulmonary edema, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm like, get out of here with your Grey's Anatomy med school. So mum, this
get
is
him up
real.
To the fifth floor, get him up to psych, you know what's needed.
Stop mucking about. So mum, this is real med school.
This is actually med school, right.
I mean, that's a lot of study. I know your dad was a teacher, and Lucy, now you're a teacher.
Dad is a big driver of education, mm-hmm. and he's one of like 10 siblings who he had the opportunity to pursue further education, whereas none of his other siblings did. And he came over to the UK through education.
From Zambia.
Lucy was like really, well, you still are, but was really athletic and brilliant footballer. So that we had our passions. Mine was music, Lucy's sports, but rule number one.
Yeah.
Make sure school has to be cool. Right. And then you can get onto the rest of the stuff. Right. But the grades need to be on point and you need to take this seriously.
On point as in like straight A's.
As good as you can do.
Yeah, like, I think it was more just the be purposeful in education. Yes. Like you're there to learn, make the most of it.
Value it.
Yeah.
He always made sure we didn't take it for granted and remind us of our grandma and our aunties. Like, they're really intelligent women. They could have excelled given the opportunity.
To have this
and
education.
And he's like, look at what you have. Don't play around. Mm. Wow. So it was all, he was teaching us the alphabet, like, what, 2, 3? Like, he was on it.
Yeah.
And then, Lucy got a first-class law degree. And then she decided...
I'm a little scared of Lucy. Anyway.
Side hustle, law degree.
Lucy's all quiet in the corner with her... With her enormous brain.
It's out of control.
That's amazing. No, I'm so interested in that because it really, academia is just not in, it's not run through. We're both also very purposeful in everything we do.
Yeah. Mm. I educated myself. I'm just not very good within traditional educational academic parameters. I don't like people telling me what to do.
Yeah, let's just get it a bit more straight.
I mean, I could dress it up any way you like. But I'm not very good with
authority. It's true, so I home educate my children pretty much for that reason, that there's one way but it doesn't fit every unique individual. So I 100%
I left school and I feel like that's when my education started. I was always reading, but when I left school I kind of had time to actually read about what I wanted to read about. I discovered people like Toni Morrison and all sorts of incredible writers, and my mind sort of got blown. Nikki Giovanni and like a beautiful poetry and James Baldwin and all these writers.
See, this was my uni. This was my how she talks about things. Like, it's really interesting say purposeful, that was something that was important to your dad, because I guess that can be in academia, but it can be about the way you live your life and the way you take things in and the way you approach things. And that's what I was taught by my mother, just be purposeful and value everything that's around you, pay attention to your life
and mean it.
Mean
it. Never do anything halfway. Do you know what I mean? Don't just half turn up. If you're going to turn up fully or stay home.
Yeah.
But throughout all this, your dad, you said, was like helping you with the music as well. Like, what's the right terminology? Like,
hot housing.
Yeah, but like, you know, like helping you put things out and like make, I imagine, like artwork and put it out.
Oh,
like,
right, right. That's not hot housing. Right.
No, supporting.
Supporting.
Not hot housing. Supporting.
Yeah.
So was that ever worrying him, the fact that you wanted to go into an industry like the music industry?
Yeah, I mean, it was mainly mum burning off the CDs, sending things
down. Sorry, mum. That's what I meant. Burning off the CDs. That was
mum. Yes, yeah. I remember when the Chipmunk song came out, Diamond Rings, on the radio, they didn't mention me. They were just like, it's Chipmunk's new single, and they didn't say my name. So my mum was like, by the way, the girl who's singing on that song is called. So she really went for it. I mean, she was managing stuff like from day dot. They did worry a little bit. I mean, when I rang my dad to say, listen, I'm going to leave med school and go to London, looking back, that was pretty maverick because I didn't know, I knew Naughty Boy in London, that was it. Didn't know where I was going to live, but I just got signed as a writer. So I was like, I can afford to live in London for a year, so let's just see. But I think that's what made the whole journey way more purposeful as well, because I was like, I've left a career in medicine, which is serious, and I've got a year. So like, I wasn't going and chilling out in the studio, I was going to write, and what can we, like, just work. You just have the hunger and that heat under you.
And what year did you leave med school?
2009, was it?
Wait a minute. So that means 3 years later, you're closing and opening the Olympic ceremony.
Yeah,
it really
Come now.
Talk about purposeful.
I'll show you purposeful goals. I knew, of course, you had a huge presence, and it was such an amazing performance. What a thing to be part of. But I didn't know you were part of the opening and closing. It's just...
Yeah, beautiful, phenomenal. Yeah, it really felt like, especially because after the journey beforehand, then this, you know, all the risks to be there really felt surreal, complete dream. And yeah, just to be, I think it was random. They didn't know who each other teams had booked, but they just happened to both ask me, the closing ceremony team and the opening ceremony. And I was like,
That was really interesting about that. I remember your performance at that opening ceremony so well. You were just like an empress. You were just like so beautiful. It was incredible. It was just extraordinarily powerful. But when I think about it, my perception of you was that of an artist who'd been around for quite some time.
Right.
So that's really interesting to me that we're talking about 3 years. And we weren't, before you got here, talking about the Emily Sandé years. We weren't every time you turn on the edge, it's Emily Sandé again.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that meant that gave you a kind of weight to your power that was really quite beautiful, I have to say, in a really kind of made me proud to see this beautiful black girl standing up there singing powerfully gently. You've got this powerful, gentle thing that you do that gives me goosebumps. I love it because it's so rooted and it's so outside of what we come to expect from young women in the music industry. So many young women are pushed into doing so many different things, like skipping about and maybe losing themselves somewhat. How did you really hold on to that? Is it because you're a writer as well, do you think?
I think that was a big part of it. And also, I've always been quite serious with music, even as a kid. I said to myself, I'm not going to write love songs because everybody likes love songs. This was about eight. So I wanted to write about world politics. And even from young, I thought music is a really serious thing. That's probably because I've been introduced to Nina Simone, for example.
Right.
And she's talking about, you know, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And she's talking, and then Joni Mitchell, you can just hear there's a sadness and seriousness. And also I said, this is a voice a medium women have. If you can write and be in control of your music, your voice, without anybody interfering, can be heard. And not often we get to truly be heard. So I always took music super serious.
That was the other thing we talked about before you got here. I was like, the sense of that your musicality came first.
Yeah.
Always. And that's always such a kind of precious, beautiful thing to see. You know, that report's just come out. You've seen about misogyny.
I can't believe that this doesn't already exist. I did a podcast about sexual assault in the music industry probably like 5 years ago, and I couldn't believe how much we got told and how hard it was to get through any doors. And we were doing it for the BBC, but we couldn't get a kind of momentum, even though what we were putting out was kind of horrendous and horrific, in a way that it's been obviously been opened up in the film industry, but the music industry just still, it's still, the infrastructure is still so locked down in this archaic way. So I hope that this does something.
Well, the reports happened, and you know, just people who are listening who don't know, you know, it's really just, it's not really exposed. It's not like nobody knows, but the misogyny in the music industry is rife, has always been rife, and what women have had to put up with is just, it's, you know, unconscionable. But they are creating a body now that women in the music industry can go and directly report instances of misogyny or sexual harassment or anything they're going through. Makita said to me, that isn't there already?
Right.
No, there isn't a place. There's nowhere for people to go. There's nowhere, really? There's nowhere for women to go. What was your experience in terms of the industry in that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I guess from the beginning I always just, sadly, that's what it is.
It's part of it.
And I mean, slowly you see changes here and there, but the infrastructure is very much the same. You know, these are people, usually men, that have long, long-standing relationships with one another. And, you know, no one's going to openly be misogynistic, but it's what's said behind closed doors, which we're never going to be privy to. So it's just a feeling. And always, you know, there's always a man to ask permission. Is this song good enough? Do you think this is ready? Da-da-da-dee. And then you take it to the next man. Can we get a bit of money for a video? Is that okay? Do you believe in this? And there's decisions and conversations done between men, and sometimes often women aren't really involved in those. So you do, it's a brick wall a lot of the time, and it's just finding people that, one, have power, because that is important, but two, also have the humanity and the sensitivity that's needed with musicians. I think people forget musicians are very fragile people, very sensitive, and like you're thrown into one of the most cutthroat businesses ever. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, who do I trust? Like,
so it's hard. And also, oh shit, there's no one taking care of me?
Yeah, right. Does anyone care?
there's no, that's what Lily Allen always says. Lily always says, it's just like, there's no care. You're not looked after, so you have to find ways to look after yourself.
But there's a facade of care.
Yes.
There's hundreds of people around you kind of going, you know, do you need another drink? But if you actually need to really talk about something, who's there to listen?
Yeah.
So you left Virgin a few years ago, and I read that you said, because they wouldn't let me do what I wanted to do. And I wondered what kind of things they're saying no to these days to someone of your, I mean, your stature and success, but I am reading the Barbra Streisand autobiography at the moment.
Oh, wait. I can't believe she's managed to get in it again.
25 minutes I waited.
25 minutes. Well done, Nikita. Well done. It's all about Babs.
I was trying to do one episode without mentioning it, but this book, Lucy, Emily, I implore you to read it.
It's a really big book.
It's a ton. you know, each third would have about 9 of these instances of just like, I had to fight, I had to push. You're like, but you're fucking Barbra Streisand. Doesn't matter. The struggle is never over, but you must keep fighting. Maybe that's it.
Yes.
But I wondered what your no's were. Like, is it art direction, musical direction?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I will say with Virgin, you know, it was a really magical experience, that first album.
Yeah.
And that was really special. So I never felt completely constricted, but I wanted total freedom. I really wanted to be like, this is who I am, and this is, but you know, you're in a really big corporate giant. Essentially, that's what it was. Even though it felt small within the team, I had a great NR, great art director. We were kind of boutique within the Virgin company, but then it grows and grows, and then it got bought by Universal.
Right.
My A&R left.
Right.
So the things that I was really pushing, let's say the second album, after such huge success on the first, people are trying to recreate it one way or another, but I'm, you know, that was from my soul. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever's going to come next time
sort
is going to come. You know, and I was going through a lot of awakening, you know, in terms of my identity, being a black woman. How I had my hair didn't really fit me anymore. I realized what I was representing wasn't who I felt like inside and who I'd grown into. By that point, I'd been to Zambia. I'd finally met my grandmother, my cousins.
Wow. How old were you when you went?
24.
And that was the first time?
Yeah.
Did you go too?
Yeah, maybe I'd been once previously, and then Emily's first time I was there as well.
And you got to meet your grandmother?
Yeah. And they were all singers. Everybody's a musician. They're incredible musicians and singers. And I just thought, up until that point, I only really heard stories from my dad. What's it like? But going there, it was a real
feeling.
So I was changing so much inside. You know, I can't be a product. And that's what they need. Mm. That's why they've signed you. That's why they've given them money. Mm. So that's the business. But I'm like, I'm spiritually changing.
Yeah.
So I think at that first, for the second album, I had to put my foot down and that I want to do something a lot more spiritual and that reflects my life. I can't be jumping around singing next to me right now because I'm going through a divorce. Changing, you know, I'm having this massive awakening inside of me, but I have to stay working.
It's
you
so
know?
Funny, isn't it? Because I listened to like the Stevie Wonder, like the 4 albums that came out over around throughout the 70s. That is literally Stevie evolving and changing spiritually, politically, musically. Can you imagine if after Songs of Aquila, they were like, I think the story's been told. I think let's just keep doing this. We would have lost so much beautiful music. Yeah. It's like, they're such idiots because the transformation of true creatives is the journey you want to go on with them.
Yeah. And actually, that's what they want as well. Yes. They want a long-term artist. They want something that's going to endure.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, they're too scared to allow the artist to really have the sort of space to explore to get there. It's a weird duality.
So you're in freedom land now.
Yeah.
I noticed while you're talking about these things, you look at your sister a lot, and you really support each other. You're very close, aren't you?
Like, oh yeah. If I need the rail, I'm gonna call Lucy. Like, listen, this is actually like, because me, I can be a bit too airy fairy. I'm Pisces, and she's like, well, these are the facts. This is what's happening.
What star sign are you, Lucy?
I'm Aquarius.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's funny because I think I'm airy fairy. We're probably we need someone further in the spectrum.
I'll be like, oh, but maybe it's this. She's like, no, like she protects me for sure.
Yeah.
She'll be like, these people, you know, just bad. She'll people. Always warn me, and I won't listen.
Yeah. And she'll be like, do you sniff him out? Quite early?
At
quite
the beginning, she's like, actually, just be careful. And I'm like, yeah.
You are growing up in Scotland, because I am half Scottish. My dad, biological dad, is Robin, Scottish, red hair. I
have work.
A brother and a sister, red hair, with my family from Edinburgh. And I went to Edinburgh last January. Yeah, like a year ago this month.
To your grand's birthday.
To my granny Annie's 92nd birthday. And I was like, who's all these white people with red hair who aren't just, and because my job is meeting a lot of people, I had to keep reminding myself, this isn't just a table of people, these are my relatives. Right. This is my family. And that was kind of crazy to me. But you have grown up with your Zambian heritage and your Scottish heritage.
So our mum's from England. We ended up in Scotland.
Oh,
so
she's from Cumbria.
Yeah, from Cumbria, right, that's right.
Right, that's why I was getting
but
confused.
But growing up in Scotland was, like looking back now, it was amazing just being in, like, I mean, I'm a big, like, nature lover, so just knowing when we go back and visit now, it's just peaceful. And I think I was having a conversation with someone the other day about there wasn't many distractions, you know.
Where
so
were you?
We were in Aberdeenshire. I mean, you know, they were saying amazing. There was all different aspects of it. There were some challenges, and but yeah.
Were there any other black people?
No, that was that was the challenge.
I was going to say, just a little question.
So that was our normal.
Yeah.
But then when you look back, you realise, you know, we probably did feel quite isolated. And thank God we had one another as well.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, we're so close growing up. And we were facing... You know, we're so different. We had friends, obviously, and it was so beautiful growing up there. But I think anything that makes you feel like a bit of an outsider, it will influence your, you know, your development.
And your dad says something to you about being the only black family in the village. So, you know, you're representing our family every time you are out in the world. You're representing your sister even.
Yeah.
Because I asked mum if it was the same in... Because mum grew up in Suffolk in the 70s.
Right, really? Black family.
Yeah, only black family. So she knows.
Trust me, I know.
That's why she took me straight to Portobello Road to raise me.
I was like, and we're out.
Let's not do this anymore. But I was like, did Nanny and Grandad John say the same thing to you? Like, you know, sort of be excellent or sort of...
Well, for my dad, he was paranoid. Really, about what white people might think about us.
Yeah.
He would just talk about the people all the time. He'd like, you know, don't let the people see you this, don't let the people see you do that, don't let the people, don't touch the people's things. Because I was always in everything, you know. Like, what's that? He basically wanted us to fly under the radar.
Yes.
That was exactly, yeah.
And not really ripple the pond.
Mm. Which, assimilate, that was probably the perfect word.
And unfortunately for him, I was his daughter. So that was really a bit of bad luck for him. And also my brother was just, it just wasn't ever going to happen. But he was just really worried that we were going to get judged all the time.
Yeah.
So
pressure and like keeping yourself in rather than just, you know.
Yes, at one point, this is how extreme it got. At one point, he didn't want us to flush the loo after a certain time at night.
Oh, God.
Because they would know that somebody in the house had used the loo. It was like, oh, my God.
Oh,
it's really sad. It's horrible.
Imprisoned,
It's really, really sad.
And like, don't be seen, don't be heard.
Yeah. Right. Don't be seen, don't be heard, don't be noticed.
Yeah.
you know, and I just went the other way.
I was going to say, you...
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's like, you know, that feeling claustrophobia and just feeling repressed. It's awful to feel repressed for whatever reason, in whatever way. And you, I think, you know, if you've got any kind of spirit, you're always going to fight back.
But how was it for your Cumbrian mother marrying a Zambian man in the 80s?
So. Yeah. She was cut off, basically.
Oh, she was? Her family?
Yeah. Like, to my mum and dad's wedding, I think one auntie... from my mum's family came.
And I think that's why we had this comparison. Like, we'd heard tales from my mum and dad that were so bad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Sunderland's late 80s, you know, Zambian man and Cumbrian woman.
Ouch.
They went through a lot. So, you know, they got spat at. They got even attacked when I was in the pram with them. So they went through so much. I think that was our... That's racism. That's when you can really feel it. I think if we look back now, it was difficult growing up being so different with always that threat of racism. It's like, sometimes if someone doesn't like you, just have a fight. But it's almost like you're like, oh, but they're going to say the words.
Totally.
And they're going to call me this.
Totally.
The worst.
Yeah. And you're kind of cower away and you don't get to be yourself. Yeah. You know, let's just have it out. But you're just scared of this racism. So I think, but in comparison to what my parents have been through, we were living the life.
Right. It's so true. But then you still have your own version of it. I remember, it's so funny you said the words, because that's what it was. It was like, please don't say something that I won't be able to unhear about myself.
Yeah.
And me and my cousin were in Bury St. Edmunds, where my nan lived in Suffolk. We left the swimming pools and we were in such a good mood, and these horrible little boys called us coons. Mm. And I remember just like, it hurt my back.
Yeah.
It went in me. And I was like, I can't handle that ever happening again. Yeah. I don't know what that was, but that hurt and that scared me.
And it's so true. There's no reaction to those words. There's nothing you can counter, you know, especially when you're in such a minority, like growing up. I think sometimes people think, oh, you're being too sensitive, or you're snowflakes. It's not. It's like you said, it's a very serious pain, which brings up childhood traumas, and it could easily be avoided.
And what you don't realise, I suppose, and it took me a long time to realise that I was still reacting to those things as an adult. You know, there's a part of me waiting for some vile thing to come out, something hateful to be said, or like you
and
said,
really,
the words.
That really is trauma, isn't it? Waiting for a trigger.
What you just said, it's like the words went in your back, you know? Mm. It's like that stuff.
But we're also sitting around this table, four very successful people. That shit is fuel. Yeah. Unfortunately, it shouldn't have to be. Yeah. It shouldn't have to come from pain.
Yeah.
But pain is fuel.
Yeah.
And I think...
It can be if you use it right.
And I
if you survive it.
I'm just it's nice to be around the table and talk, know that you guys have been through all these things, and look what you've done with your life.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely makes you stronger. Because you're dealing with things that you shouldn't have to as a kid.
Yes.
But you have to grow up super quick, and you have to develop this thick skin, really, which has definitely helped me throughout my time. But it's the deeper part of you, the part your artist within you. It's a shame that there's kind of these layers that you, until you can actually be yourself and just relax out and about, you have to get through these layers. So if you're in competition, that's someone that has none of these worries, they're never going to be called these words walking down the street, they're never going to be attacked, there's none of these issues, then how can you sit in the room and be an artist with them?
Yeah.
Like, until you've fully relaxed. I think that's why so many people will turn to substance abuse or alcohol or bad habits, because they're trying to get to that state of peace,
which
takes so much longer to get to when you have to deal with stuff that's so out with your control and so systemic.
Well, now I'd like to talk to you about love then, girls.
It's time for love.
Time for love. I hear that you're in love.
Yes, I'm very much in love.
Beautiful.
He got all like dreamy. That's cute.
It's that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, it's an amazing feeling, and especially talking about all of this stuff. Growing up, I really had such a sense of loneliness, and music was my friend. Music was what I put everything into, and that's where so much of my expression comes through, that because I did it from when I was a kid, and that's where I was heard. But there was this loneliness all the time, and then even when you start working, the success is wonderful, but you are essentially alone.
Oh, totally.
Everyone around you, you're paying. So you make fantastic relationships with them, but like, are we going to chill on a day off? Or, you know, and there's that kind of like... And then, heartbreak as well, because you get so close to people because it's 24/7 working. And then, so yeah, that you do come home to this loneliness. And
then also, Lucy, do you have, you said you homeschool, so you have kids.
Yes, yeah.
So kind of as someone as close to you as your sister, her life is changing and evolving. You're sort of missing things and you're away.
You're supposed to be the little sister.
She's like, she's got the kids.
She's like, grow up, Adele.
Welcome to the real world.
Yeah, exactly. How many kids do you have?
I've got two little boys. I've got two stepsons. My stepsons are teenagers, and then my boys are 5 and 2.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot of boys.
So do you now have the time to be with like people like your nephews in a completely different way?
Yeah.
You make that time.
Yeah, and I think it all started to dawn on me with, you know, lockdown. When everything, this thing that you've been go, and you know, I've got to achieve, and then suddenly everything shut off. So there's no, you didn't cancel anything. You don't know what the future holds. There's no security in the future now because your job's been completely cancelled. So that was the first time I really let myself relax a bit and just exhale. That's when I fell in love with Ioana. That's when we had this, you know, amazing time together. And
how did you meet somebody new in lockdown then?
Well, it started with learning about classical music. So, yeah. So that's how it started.
No, it's like follow what you love.
Yeah, and it was all came from music. And also, you know, there's no time to practice classical piano when you're working all the time. But this is something for years I'd wanted to get into. And that's the kind of double-edged sword of success. Like, you have to kind of have to pause your progression to fulfill your, you know, commitments. But the musician in you is like, why aren't we practicing? Why aren't we spending 5 hours today doing this and learning more about this never-ending world of music? So that's how we met. And yeah, just falling in love has been amazing. Really life-changing. And seeing my sister become a mother and an amazing mother. Her children growing. It's just been the most, natural, beautiful time of my life.
Oh, I love that. I read that you said, I'm in a very lucky position that I'm free as a black woman to say that I'm in love with a woman.
Yeah.
What did you mean by free?
Well, I think there's one thing, you know, there's so many levels that you have to go through in self-acceptance. I think first of all, the biggest thing is to accept who you are or who you love. And because there's so much mentally to kind of block you in that. And then once you've accepted yourself, then it's your family's acceptance. Then, you know, wider, you know, telling my fans was a big deal. Mm-hmm. But then I think the freedom to actually say it. You know, I think a lot of people may feel the same way as me, but can't say it or feel they'll be judged, or there's all these different pressures, you know. And I feel that I feel free because I have to. You know, I'm that type of person. I have to sing, I have to make music. If I love someone, I have to say it. Maybe I will be attacked, maybe people may not like it, but I can't not say what's my truth. Mm. It's impossible for me.
So. What a time to be making an album when something so beautiful is happening in your world.
And to sing those songs with real conviction. You know, I'm ready to love again. To really put yourself out there after being hurt. To actually get in that position where you're like, actually, I'm ready to take that risk again.
Yes.
And I've put myself back together, and now I'm ready to really go for it. So to sing it, really meaning it. And we wrote a track on the, let's say for instance, called July 25th. So it's our first composition that we've done together. And
oh, so you're writing.
God, you're making music together.
Yeah.
You went on this record?
On the last one. Let's say for instance. So it's beautiful. It's just so lovely because often words aren't enough. And when you, like, that's why we've just got this crazy connection as both being musicians.
Oh my God.
A lot can be said through melodies. So it's really so lovely.
Oh, yeah.
So sexy and great.
That's why you look like that in that picture. Oh, can make sense now. Because I looked at Michelle, look at the look in her eye. Right. You're like, hi there.
Yeah. But it's like a kind of, it's quite timeless, that photo. I feel like it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, kind of almost old Dinah Washington
vibes.
Yes,
absolutely. And so what will you change now that you've learned sort of so much more about the things that you want and that you need to live the life you want? How will you change promoting this record and the way you are as an artist in you know, we need this industry.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Not even unfortunately, it's like, you've got to find the way. You've got to find a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel really lucky with Chrysalis. They've really been behind this album. And everything that I've really wanted to do, from the artwork to the videos to everything, the song choices, they've really allowed me to have that, you know, complete say in what's going on. So I feel lucky there, but I think it's just taking time to make decisions, not being rushed, not feeling pressured, consulting my family, you know, my partner, Lucy, my parents, and just, letting things have a natural flow. If you force something, it's not going to happen. And I think I love the album, and I hope that that love and passion will kind of make people want to hear it.
It's been so lovely to have you guys here. It really, really has.
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming in. And just, I truly believe the more people that come through our door, I feel like these are spiritual moments in my life that I will never forget. And these are connecting moments that we take into our hearts. So thank you for being at our table.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Beautiful food.
Oh, great drink.
Did you like the food? I love the food.
Oh, I'm so glad. She was like, I'm going to make a vegan feast for Lucy.
I'm going to give you some food.
I'll show you vegan. What I thought my drink was going to bring to the lunch was actually brought by the guests, warmth and wonder.
Wow, weren't they lovely?
Really lovely. I loved someone coming on with their sibling.
Yeah.
And they really are close sisters, Emily and Lucy. Like, you can just see them as little utes running around together. And
so Emily does this sweet thing because she is quite like, you can see she lives very much in her head and in her kind of artistic brain and her mind and being, and she kind of looks to Lucy to ground her while she's talking, and I just you could see the rhythm of their childhood whilst we were sitting opposite them.
And you know when you meet someone and you know they're in a really special, beautiful time in their life, and I could, that's really emanating from her, and the fact that she's made new music and there is an album to sort of encapsulate this moment in time.
She's
making music with her partner.
I can't wait to hear that,
right?
I, like Joanna, I really want to hear that. I bet that's why she looks like that in that picture.
When she gave us
the record, I thought that is a really something, a really enigmatic about that photo.
Close to herself at the moment. And actually doing the research, remembering the kind of stratospheric career that she had. I didn't say in the interview, but that year that she did the Olympics opening and closing ceremony, her album was the biggest selling album of the year.
Wow.
So like that, I mean,
that was quite the year.
That's 3 years after she'd left medicine school.
3 years after she'd left medicine school. I couldn't believe moment. It's really interesting when somebody comes who we have no knowledge of each other whatsoever.
Or previous connection.
And that we can get this place of intimacy and beautiful exchange like so quickly and so easy. And that's what food does. That's what this table does. And that's what we do. And that's why I'm so glad we're making these programs and we're doing this work. And it really is our way of thanking the world.
Yeah.
Every day.
Thank you, stirring it up, for existing.
No. Thank you, you.
No, but thank you, you, Mummy. And thank you, me, for doing this. Because it's enriching us and giving us so much.
It makes us better.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.